Be comfortable being uncomfortable. It may get tough, but it's a small price to pay for living a dream. Peter McWilliams.
That, like I said, I did underestimate the Colorado Trail. That is a hard trail. And, you know, that tough day, I came at a Cottonwood Pass, and there's about five, not passes that you go over, but some pretty significant climbs that day. And move quickly, here comes a lightning storm, wait out the lightning storm, move quickly, here comes another one. And then the rain started, and I got on top of that last ridge, and the lightning started all around me, and I'm just like, screw it. I stuck my, you know, trekking pole in the air. I was like, just send it. You know, let's just get this over with. But, you know, of course, I'm here, didn't get struck by lightning. But I continued down, and then I just couldn't find a camp for about five more miles, and I was ready to stop.
I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod.
Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Lace up those boots and sling on the pack for a romp through trails, short and long. With your host and Renaissance man, Doc, it's time to embrace the suck.
Welcome back to another week on the Trail Dirtbags and Hiker Trash. I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Let's start off with a reminder. If you are enjoying the podcast, take just a minute, help us out. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not enjoying the pod, well, just go ahead and keep that to yourself. All right, let's get to this week's incredible story. Today, I am talking to a thru-hiker from the Pacific Northwest who grabbed his dream by the horns and hiked the PCT after retiring from the military. Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod, Jay France. How's it going, Jay?
It's going great, Doc, and really appreciate what you're doing for our community, and appreciate you allowing me the opportunity to come on and spend some time with you.
I'm excited to talk to you. What branch of the military did you serve in?
So I served 31 and a half years in our United States Air Force.
And what was your rank and your responsibility there at the end?
At the end, I was a chief master sergeant, which is our E9, our top enlisted grade, and retired as the command senior enlisted leader for United States Transportation Command.
Mm-hmm. Top enlisted person, top enlisted rank, right? There's a difference between officers and enlisted folks, correct?
That is correct, yes.
Yeah, is there some playful back and forth between the officers and the enlisted folks?
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, the enlisted is the backbone, you know, of all services. And we enjoy spending the time, especially with our young officers and watching them grow up. And more times than not, run into people later on in their career. And we get to talk about the fun times we had jabbing each other as young people. And which, you know, grows us into the people we are at the end of our careers, usually, you know, doing some bigger things.
Right. You know, I'm in education. So there's a similar dichotomy there between our certificated staff and our non-certificated mm-hmm. staff, also called our classified staff. And, mm-hmm. you know, we celebrate our classified staff as like you said, being the backbone of the organization. Schools don't get opened up. They don't get cleaned. They don't get supported if the classified staff aren't there. So I can appreciate the dynamic that exists between the officers and the enlisted ranks.
Right on.
All right. Hey, Jay, now we know that you're a PCT thru hiker. Did you mm-hmm. pick up a trail name along the way?
I certainly did. Yeah. My trail name is Meat Grinder.
Meat Grinder, like at a butcher shop, or how does that work?
Not in a murder way, not in a horror story way. It comes down to my soft, supple nipples. I had a nipple chafe problem. And so day two on the Pacific Crest Trail, well, day one, I started out wearing a Columbia Silver Ridge shirt, and the inside of the chest pockets have mesh on the inside, and was experiencing a little chafing. Didn't think to tape them up like I used to do when I would run, and just thought I would ride it out. Well, the second day was really bad, to where it was actually bleeding through my shirt. And I was walking into Lake Morena with a firefighter who, we're just hiking together, kind of busting each other's chops and, talking about our careers. He was retired as well. And yeah, we just took a break. And I went into the bathroom there at the Lake Morena campground and thought I was alone. And yeah, so I took off my shirt and washed myself up, and I was rubbing Neosporin on my left nipple. And the guy comes in, he's like, "Bro, what the heck is going on?" And it was an awkward, but kind of a funny situation. And he let me, have my privacy and walked out. He's like, "Hey, man, I was going to call you Nips, but I think we're going to go with meat grinder." And so I was like, "Hey, that's pretty cool." But then I noticed last year I hiked the Pacific Crest Trail in 2021. There were a lot of young solo women hikers on the trail. And when I would meet somebody in a remote spot, they're like, "Hey, what's your trail name?" I'm like, "Meat grinder." And they're like, "Oh shit, again, I was like, "Hey, not in a murder way, not in a horror story kind of way, but it's about my nipples." And so the conversation didn't get any better. So I thought I'd get a good idea and shorten it to grinder. Not knowing about the hookup app for men, and had no idea. I'm 51 years old. I don't I
You're a
didn't know about
youngster.
that.
You're a youngster.
Yeah. Well, I learned quickly as I'm hiking around three guys, and no one was judgy on the trail. And they're like, "Hey, bro, what's your trail name?" I was like, "Grinder." They're like, "Cool, man. You know what Grinder is?" I was like, "Yeah." So we're just talking, no big deal. About 2 days later, I'm talking about my wife and kids, and they're looking at me all confused, and they're like, "Bro, do you really know what Grinder is?" And I'm like, "Yeah, it's a hot Italian sandwich. It's delicious." And they're like, "No, it's a hot Italian something, but it's not a hot Italian sandwich." So they broke it down for me, and then I went back to meat grinder, and yeah, so there it is. I stuck with it.
All right. I was going to ask you if we were to shorten it, would you go by grinder or would you go by meat? Because that's a lot of syllables. So.
Yeah, but I did get a compliment later on the trail. One of the guys that I was hiking around was like, "Bro, you would totally kill on grinder." I was like, "Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate the compliment." But yeah.
Take that as it was intended. Very nice.
Yeah.
Now, meat grinder, I have to tell you that, we're here in season five. We're marching on our way to 250 episodes. And I can
Awesome.
honestly say that this is the first episode where the phrase soft, supple nipples has been used. So I'm going to
Yeah.
congratulate you on kind of being groundbreaking in that area.
That's what winning looks like. Thank you.
Yeah. And you know what? This is the name that just keeps on giving, because as people ask you what your trail name is and you have to explain it, and there's always this phrase in there about, well, it's about my nipples. I mean,
Yeah.
that is just, that's golden. That's golden.
Yeah. And then people asked to see him, and the word kind of traveled up the trail. They're like, "Oh, you're meat grinder. Can I see your nipples?" I was like, "Well, they're pretty unremarkable now that they've healed, but if you got some pasties or something, I mean, I'll rock them. It's cool,
Right.
But nobody produced the pasties, but so all good."
Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't think that people would ask to see them. That's a different wrinkle.
Lot of people did. Yeah.
As if your unusual nipple had something to do with the fact that they were bleeding when it was actually the shirt, right?
Yeah, it was the shirt, but yeah, I swapped to a sun hoodie later on, and no more nipple problems. But
Nice.
yeah,
Sun hoodies, great creation, right? I mean, it seems like
absolutely.
a recent development just over the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
I was out there sporting the button up, long sleeve gear for a while and looking kind of nerdy, and discovered the sun hoodie and have never looked back.
Yeah, I wore the Columbia shirt for a while. I mean, it healed, and then I swapped out at Mammoth Lakes, and yeah, not turning back. Wore a sun hoodie exclusively on the Colorado Trail this year, and that's my go-to. Never turn back.
Well, if you wore the Columbia shirt from Campo to Mammoth Lakes, I mean, maybe the people were right in asking to see your nipples. I mean, maybe there's like huge calluses built up after that lake.
Yeah, pretty much. That's how it was. I cut the mesh out, and that seemed to ease it a little bit. But
I
yeah,
thought
I'll tell you, Doc, it's
you're gonna you cut a circle out in the front of the shirt. You just had them sticking
just so
out.
they would, yeah,
Perfect.
just so they would poke out. Oh man, I wish I would have thought of that. Oh, it's too late.
Nice. Hey, now you are not the only retired military that I've talked to on the podcast. I've talked to a couple of others, most notably Ginger Balls, Ben Vaughn.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Commander. He was on the other side. He was on the officer side. He was Lieutenant Commander, I think, in the Naval Reserve.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to hear how your story compares to his, and just in terms of, and we'll get there. I don't want you to answer
right now.
Get there. But in terms of getting interested in hiking and discovering the PCT and how that all went. So
yeah,
it'd be an interesting comparison in my mind as we go through this.
Great.
All right. Now, hey, meat grinder. I'm going to play around with that throughout the episode. So don't be surprised.
Yeah.
Meat grinder, have you had a chance to listen to the podcast before?
I have. So some of the folks that were influencers and YouTubers that I had watched in preparation for both the Pacific Crest Trail and Colorado Trail. So yeah, I watched IB Tat, Feathers, Chad, I think Lubinsky is his last name.
Chad.
And right, exactly. And what's the other guy's name? He's on the PCT right now. He had him on twice. He's from Florida.
Jupiter.
Yeah, I watched those two as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mentioned Carl Stanfield, just a quick little shout out, because Carl Stanfield, also known as the Professor, he actually set out this year to try and set the record for most miles hiked in a calendar year. And he's fallen short, and he feels kind of disappointed by that. But what he has done this year is he hiked the International AT. So he went from Key West, Florida to the Canadian border. So basically border there, if Key West is the southern border, I would say it is.
Yeah. And
he did the CDT, went from, I think it was northbound. I think he went New Mexico to Canada. Mexican border to Canada. And then he did a southbound hike of the PCT, and he's actually in my neck of the woods. I found out through social media, he's in my neck of the woods.
Yeah.
And I actually met him last night. I went to where he was hiking. He was happened to be passing through a campground that was accessible by car. I picked him up and we went to dinner. I took him to dinner, paid for his dinner, and then also took him shopping to resupply at a market that was open.
Yeah.
And took him back. And it was just, it was so cool. I enjoy talking to people, but it's even better meeting them in person and kind of interacting with them and seeing them up close and hearing how things are going. So that was a really cool moment for me.
Yeah. He's incredible. I've been watching his journey. I've been watching, you know, Quadzilla's journey on social media. You know, both going about it in different ways, but, it's cool to see Professor. I know he's got to be getting close to wherever his finish is, but man, you want to talk about impressive, but, you got to meet the man. So, you know, all about it.
He's got about 430 miles left, and we're recording this episode on November 29th. He's got a plane on December 18th.
Mm-hmm.
He is confident that he will make it down to the border and make that plane. So,
yeah. Awesome.
And Quadzilla, I talked to Quadzilla. He has agreed to come back on once he has finished. And I think his finish is almost imminent. I mean, he's almost done.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed some of his videos are, you know, he's posting a little bit afterwards. So he's got to be getting close. Cause I saw last time I saw, I think he's in New Mexico, cause he's finishing up doing southbound on the CT. Ran into some tough weather up there in Colorado, but guy's a beast.
Yeah. And so for those folks listening who maybe aren't familiar with Professor and Quadzilla, they are both embarking upon and finishing up the calendar year Triple Crown. That's where you hike all three American long trails in one calendar year. And prior to this year, I think we were at 13 people that had done it. And I have talked to, I think, five or six of those people. And so with the addition of Quadzilla and Professor, I think more than half, or just about half, of the people who have done the calendar Triple Crown, which I think is pretty cool. I mean, those people are
incredible. It is.
They've got just an incredible mindset. I think in talking with the professor last night, you know, we talked about whether it was a tougher physical feat or mental feat. And he thinks it's probably more mental.
I would agree.
Persist. You have to stay out there. He's been out there since January 1st.
Yeah. That is just incredible. Even on the, you know, doing one trail, even a shorter trail, you know, for me as well, the mental piece, got it. as far as the, you know, preparation, the physical piece, no worries, again, but the mental, or missing my family, you know, that's what the challenge is, for me. But, you know, it hits everyone different. Sometimes, some days it's the physical piece, some days it's the mental piece. But I would say overall, probably the mental would be the most difficult for, especially something like that. Wow.
Yeah. Meat Grinder, I asked you if you'd listened to any of the episodes. I want to make sure that you're aware of a segment that happens towards the end called the Pro Tip Insight of the Week. That's where I will turn and ask you to share some trail wisdom with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience better. So I know you're aware of that.
I am.
All right.
The Must Bring Gear Review.
Another feature we've been doing this season, as you know, is the Must Bring Gear Review, sponsored by the ultralight backpacking gear company, Six Moon Designs. Are you familiar with Six Moon Designs?
I am. Yeah. I carried their umbrella this year on the Colorado trip.
You know, I get that from a lot of people. They've heard of Six Moon Designs, and the most prominent piece of equipment that they have purchased has been the umbrella.
Yeah. I met them at PCT on the Trail Days piece up there in Cascade Locks, and bought it then. Didn't want to carry it through Washington, so I sent it home, but used it this year on the CT.
Now, did you find a way to attach it to your pack or something, or did you carry it in your hand the whole time?
I just carried it because what I found, I tried the attachment last year in the desert on the PCT, and I was constantly messing around with it, you know, trying to get the proper angle for the wind and everything. So I would just put my trekking poles in my bag, or, you know, sometimes I only bring one if I'm bringing a tent. So yeah, I just found it easier rather than messing with it and have it blow away, just to hold it.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the Must Bring Gear Review. Here's how it works. If you're to let a stranger pack your bag with pretty much generic gear for a multi-day hike or a multi-month hike, what is the one specific piece of gear you would insist on being packed? And if you've got a particular brand for that specific piece of gear, even better. So, Meat Grinder, what is your must bring piece of gear out there?
It is my inflatable pillow. It's the Sea to Summit Aeros, size huge, whatever that is, to support my head. Sleep is extremely important to me. So, you know, having that, that piece of comfort, even though it's a few ounces, which, you know, I don't sweat, adds to my quality of sleep, which adds to the experience. So I take that thing all the time.
Absolutely. I think two of the most prevalent things that have come up have been footwear, because you got to keep your feet happy. You're not happy. The hike is miserable. And the other thing is sleep. When it comes to sleep, it's so important, especially when you're out there just grinding it day after day, you know, 20 mile days, 25 mile days for you know, multiple months. I mean, you gotta be getting that rest. How do you sleep out on the trail? I mean, just in terms of relative, you know, ease, good night of sleep. You know, I always find it, you know, the first few days out on the trail, it's always difficult. A lot of tossing and turning. I never get a really good night's sleep until you know, a little bit into the hike. And I seem to, I don't know if it's I've reached a point of exhaustion where I get a better night's sleep, or what's happening there. How about you?
Yeah, it's very similar. You know, the first couple of days, because, you know, it's a new environment. I'm no longer accustomed to those sounds. But I'll tell you what, as soon as I start getting that sleep, I sleep better on the trail than anywhere. I sleep horribly when I take zeros. If I'm in town in a hostel, in a hotel, I really don't get quality sleep. I sleep really good when I'm out on the trail. Yeah, whether it's cowboy camping in a tent, tarp, hammock, I always sleep better out there.
All right. How about at home? Are you a good sleeper at home?
Not so much. You know, since I retired, and that constant level of stress has come down significantly. You know, I used to be that wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, thinking about, you know, what I forgot yesterday or what I need to be thinking about forward. So I really didn't sleep that well. But you know, after the PCT, that started to improve, and now it's great.
Nice. Have you heard of Norman Clyde?
No, I have not.
Norman Clyde, he was a high school principal in Independence, California, which is just east of Sierras. And he got fired from his job, which is a good thing for Norman, because he then pursued his true love, which was exploring the Sierras.
Yeah.
He did a lot of search and rescues, a lot of first ascents. There, you know, the Clyde Minaret. There are a lot of things named after Norman Clyde in the Sierras just because he was a trailblazer there.
Yeah.
But when he kind of retired from the life of being a pioneer in the Sierras, and he lived in a house, I think, east of the Sierras, he would sleep in his front yard. He could not sleep in a bed. He you know, hiking and living in the mountains for those extended periods of times for decades just kind of ruined the whole of bed for him. He slept outside under the stars.
Yeah. I mean, I can't, you know, hit him for that. You know, it does take a little bit of a readjustment period, even on a shorter trail like the CT when I came back this year. Yeah, it took a couple of days to get back used to it. But yeah.
A shorter trail like the CT. How long is the CT?
486 miles.
486.
They added a few miles this year because they had a reroute. So I'm not sure if they're going to update their official length, but I think it's 3 or 4 miles section of trail that they completed this year. But I'm not sure if that'll impact anything. But yeah.
Now, inflatable pillow, great piece of must bring gear. What would you say to the people out there who are listening who are thinking, you know what, I want to go ultralight. I want to use multi-purpose type gear. I'm going to use a stuff sack and a jacket or a stuff sack and some clothes. That'll be my pillow. I don't need to bring extra 2 or 3 ounces.
I would say give it a try before, you know, making that decision. You know, I've tried the stuff sack piece, you know, haven't tried with DCF or any of the newer materials, but I know the old Sil nylon, you know, I sweat a lot. I'm a hot sleeper, you know, waking up with that thing stuck to my face. It just wasn't comfortable at all. And with this pillow, the shape of it, you know, you can push it into your shoulder and, you know, you can move around. Toss and turn. I'm typically a side sleeper, so that thing stays put. And yeah,
I think that's
they ought to try.
Fill up a stuff sack with some dirty, smelly clothes, and use that in your bed at home for a week and see how it goes. See how you.
Yeah,
sleep. I tried it. I went not in my bed, but I would try. You know, I was of that mindset of I can find something to be a pillow.
Yeah,
what pillow is a game changer.
It is
the inflatable pillow. It is well worth the 2 or 3 ounces. You're not going to feel that.
Yeah. And if they're truly ultralight, they're not going to have extra clothes to put in there anyway. So, you know, I'll just throw that out there too.
They got the pair of clothes they're wearing. That's it.
Yeah.
Maybe a pair of chonies. I don't know. An extra pair.
Maybe.
All right.
It's the hiking poll.
All right, meat grinder, time for the hiking poll. And that's POLL, 2 L's as in survey, not what you hold in your hand out there.
Mm-hmm.
This is a 7-question survey that's going to help me assess your level of sanity. I'm going to give you a score between 1 and 100 on the sanity scale, with 1 being completely insane and 100 being completely sane. Now, you have to know there's an automatic 25-point deduction if you've done a long trail like the PCT. So possible score at this point is 75.
All right.
And I might even take off another 5 or 10 points for being the highest rank enlisted classification in the Air Force.
Hey, I'll do whatever I can to get some extra points.
All right. Hey, if I were to ask your wife or your family how they would score you on the sanity scale, where do you think you'd fall?
Pretty low. They've known me for a long time. You know, my wife served, so she got to, you know, see me at work, jumping out of airplanes, you know, shooting guns, doing all kinds of cool stuff. So I'm really not scoring all that high on that to begin with. So our baseline's kind of low.
Got it. Yeah. That's the great thing about family is that there's no hiding. There's no hiding in a family.
No.
They know the reality. You put on a good face for, you know, when you go to outside gatherings or to the workplace, but you know, at home it's
real. They know the truth. Yeah.
All right. So this is 7 questions. And it's going to be based on, this is your first time on the podcast. So we're going to do hiking questions. Hike questions.
Great.
So here we go. Question number 1, we'll start easy. Trekking poles or no trekking poles?
Trekking poles.
Oh, there's a pause there. Hesitation.
Yeah, I change my style as I go, especially on a longer trail. So got rid of my trekking poles. One of them on the PCT, kept one just for my tent because it required one. But, you know, sometimes I'll take them. Sometimes I won't. I try to challenge myself in different ways. And Sometimes that means no trekking poles, but for the most part, the majority of the time, yes.
Okay. How do your knees hold up without the trekking poles?
It took me a while after I got back from the PCT. I had a lot of jobs that kept me outside, wearing a lot of heavy equipment, jumping out of airplanes, those kind of things, you know, during a career. So I got to not any significant, you know, terrible knee issues, but I need to be a little bit more mindful of it. But they weren't all that happy with me for not wearing or for not using a trekking pole through Northern California and in Oregon last year. So, it took me a little bit to recover, but now I'm all good.
Do you enjoy jumping out of planes?
I did, yeah.
Was that a fun experience?
It was, yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot.
Nice. Now, you didn't have those, or maybe you did. Did you have those fancy parachutes where you pull on the handles and you're able to direct yourself, or were these like kind of the traditional military parachutes?
They were the traditional military parachutes, but the newer ones, even though they're round chutes, they do have toggles on them, so you can steer a bit. Not like the square chutes where you're, you know, typically going to do a stand up landing or, you know, land in a, you know, really small spot. But they do allow you to maneuver them pretty well.
Now, did you listen to the episode with Moab Joe or Z-Pak?
I did not.
They're both squirrel suit flyers.
Oh, yeah. That's a different level of crazy right there.
That is. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Question number two. What's on your feet, boots or trail runners? Now, military guy, I mean, I'm not sure how you're going to answer this.
Trail runners. You know, I had a, wore boots a lot. I had the chance to go to Army Ranger School, you know, wearing boots all through that. Did a lot of miles there. Actually, a little bit on the AT, which is a different story. But I did the Wonderland Trail in boots, and that was a horrible experience. And after that, went to trail runners and have not looked back.
Do you have a specific brand you prefer of trail runners?
I do. So typically I'll use Ultras, the Ultra Olympus. I have not tried out their new Olympus 6, but the Olympus 4 I find really comfortable. The stack height is the highest of all of their shoes. So it helps a lot with, you know, reducing some of those lower extremity issues. Yeah, they're a great shoe.
Got it. I was going to ask you what the difference was between the Olympus and the Lone Peaks, which just seemed to be really popular out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't remember the millimeter difference, but the Lone Peak, or I'm sorry, the Olympus is significantly higher as far as that stack height, that amount of cushion, than the Lone Peak or the Timps.
Right. So yeah, it's not a zero drops shoe.
It is still a zero drop.
It is. Okay. But
it is. It does. Yep.
Got it. Mm-hmm. All right. Hey, when it comes to shelter out there, are you a tent guy, tarp, hammock, bivy, or hey, let's just go cowboy camping? What's your preference?
My preference is cowboy camping. I have done, you know, a couple trails with the hammock. But for the most part, the majority of the time, I'm using a tent just because that bug protection, the additional wind protection, if it's cold, it's going to keep a little bit of that heat inside just a little bit better than some of those other options.
Right. Now, you mentioned bringing a pole, a single pole to assist. Mm-hmm. What kind of tent did you use?
I use a Z-Pax Altiplex on the PCT and the CT, but have a few tarps, you know, one I'll use for hammocking, and then, you know, another really light Z-Pax, I think is a 7x9 tarp. If I really want to get minimalistic, or, I mean, like I said, my preference would be to cowboy camp, but, I don't do bugs. So, you know, that kind of took some of that out, especially in the Sierra last year.
Yeah. Did you watch, the documentary Highline about the U.S.?
I have not.
Highline? It's a great, no. great documentary. Guys are way out there, really interesting times out there. And it was, I think it's five guys. I talked to one of them was Benny Braden. Mm-hmm. Plug It In. That was his trail name. It was because of a shirt he was wearing. I think he was an electrician and he wore a shirt that had a plug on it. Plug It In, which is just a fantastic name.
Yeah.
One of the other guys in that group, which I had no idea, was actually the creator of Z-Pax. So
right on. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, question number four. When it comes to sleeping, are you a sleeping bag guy or a quilt?
Quilt.
Quilt.
Mm-hmm.
And what is your current quilt? What's it rated to and who makes it?
So I have an Enlighten Equipment Enigma that is rated to 20 degrees. And then I also have a UGQ Bandit that's rated to 40. And I swap those out. If I need to, you know, I found it really hot last year, swapped out, had my wife send me the Bandit up in Northern California. So carried that all the way through Northern California and Oregon, and then sent back the Enlighten Equipment Enigma for Washington. Yeah, I'm typically a really hot sleeper. So I found those, you know, I've brought down the 20 degree bag down to 10 degrees, and I found it pretty comfortable.
Yeah, a 40 degree quilt, shouldn't you just wear a puffy, basically?
Yeah, but I like to, I also have I will use a sleeping bag liner, a Sea to Summit sleeping bag liner to prevent a little bit of that draft and keep my quilts clean. So I like to, cause you know, I sent my puffy home, last year. So I like to have just a little bit, usually I'll have it off to the side, just pull it over a cold spot or something like that. Especially if I'm at higher elevations.
Hey, that's a great pro tip right there. Sleeping bag liner with a quilt.
Yeah.
Can't use that now when we get to that section, but, you know, it's
right on.
You can drop those pro tips along the way. That's good.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, question number five, be careful here. Big, big possible point deduction here. When it comes to food, stove, cold soak, or stoveless?
Stove. Yeah.
Okay. No hesitation. Stove.
No hesitation.
Got to have the hot food at the end of the day.
Yeah. That's, you know, typically I will cook before I get to camp. I'll pull over to the side, kind of reflect on the day, do some journaling or whatever while my food's getting ready. That way, when I get into camp, I can just move it. But for me, especially after that Army Ranger school experience, not being able to heat up that food ever since then, I got to have some hot chow. And plus for me, it just kind of boosts my morale a little bit. You know, I thought about cold soaking. I have gone stoveless just with, you know, bars and jerky and things like that on shorter things. But for the extended trips, I got to have some hot chow, and in the morning, have some hot coffee. That gets me going.
You know, I love that concept. You know, most people think that they hike until they're done, they set up camp, and then they eat. And what you've just described is a different approach where you pull off to the side. You're not setting up camp. You're preparing your meal. You're eating. You're thinking, and then you're packing up, and you get another couple hours in, right? I mean,
exactly, yeah, yeah. Because I tend to rush, I tend to overplan, you know, just based on, you know, a career of doing that, and I've found that I'm more mindful, I'm more reflective when I stop and take that minute, and that reconstitution of that dehydrated meal helps me do that, because when I get in the camp, I'm just trying to set up and I'm just trying to get sleep and get that rest and get up and go again.
Got it. And we're going to come back to that a little bit later about your experience in the military, very regimented lifestyle. I mean, everything is very orderly and planned out, and you know, you can plan for a through hike, but planning only goes so far, right? Because I want to hear about that a little bit later. So we'll come back to that. All right. Question number six. Is life better above or below the tree line?
Above. That's why I'll never do the AT. Above the tree line. I'm a West Coast guy. I grew up in, you know, San Juan Islands. Mountains are my thing. And love the Sierra, loved Washington. Getting above those trees and seeing out as far as the eye can see. That's one of the things I love about the Colorado Trail too. Love it above the tree line.
Totally agree. No point deduction there. That is the only correct answer. And you did it without hesitation. So that's spot on. That's
right on.
All right. Hey, question number seven. Last question. What's more important, pack weight or luxury items? Are you the guy that was cutting your toothbrush in half or drilling holes through your toothbrush or not even bringing a toothbrush, just using your finger out there or a stick?
No, I'm not that level of psycho. I'm about luxury items. You know, if I bring it, I got to carry it. I got to suck it up. I got to deal with it. I'm not one for comparisons. That actually really drives me nuts. If I want to bring it, I'll bring it. Yeah, of course, I'm going to go as light as I can. I'm going to make good decisions. I'm going to maintain, safety and things like that. But if I want to bring something, I'm bringing it. And yeah, not answering to anybody. You know what I mean?
Now, this I have another question.
Yes.
It's not part of the hiking pole. It's just a corollary question. It's not going to impact your score. Did you know your back weight, your base weight on the PCT?
Yeah, I started out, it was 14 and a half. And then when I swapped out packs, I swapped out a lot of stuff when I got to Northern California, got down to about 10 and a half. And for the Colorado Trail, I brought my Tenkara fly rod and a few other luxury items. So I was about 11 pounds up there too. So, yeah.
Well done. Well done. All right. Hey, I've got to do some math now, which is, it gets complicated here. I got to take your answers and put them through the John Freaky Muir algorithm.
Right on.
I say I got to carry the 3. We're going to divide by √2, multiply by pi, and we'll adjust for the altitude at the top of Whitney. And I come up with a solid score of 52. You're just north of
right on.
The waypoint. So not too insane. You gave some pretty good answers.
Well, I appreciate that. It's good to have some confirmation that I'm not too crazy there.
It just tells me that you put on a good face here for me, but your family knows that.
So. They do. Yeah.
All right. Hey, before we get too far down the trail, let's back up a little bit. I'd love to hear about your background, where you grew up, sports and hobbies you played, and how did you get involved in the thru hiking cult? And you piqued my interest because you said you grew up in the San Juan Islands. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I grew up on Whidbey Island, Washington. It's up, of course, in the San Juans, about an hour and a half north of Seattle.
Yes, I was there, not on Whidbey, but on Bainbridge.
Okay, right on.
Took a little trip up to Seattle, and then we drove up to Vancouver, and we spent a little time on Bainbridge, which was really cool. I mean, what a great little community.
It was an awesome place to grow up. Grew up as an outdoor kid. I had an aunt and uncle that traveled a lot to national parks in the summertime. I was an only child, single mom situation, so. I would go spend time with my aunt and uncle and my one cousin. We went all over the place. My uncle actually introduced me to backpacking, to hiking, to fishing, all those things as a young guy. And, I just took off from there. The woods were my place, where I would go. When I got old enough, got into mountain biking, skiing, a lot of fishing, things like that. The through hiking answer there too, that was my grandmother. This is not just the through hiking, but the PCT as well. So I was born in April of 71, and there's a June 1971 issue of National Geographic that features the Pacific Crest Trail. And I was about 8 or 9, and she had that, I was a few years old at that time, had that thing sitting out there. I was looking at that and I was just blown away as a little guy on the scale of this. And, looking through, and, my grandmother and I looked through it. There's pictures of Goat Rocks and Glacier Peak and Crater Lake and fire. And, you could see the look of hard work, but contentment, on the faces of the people in there. And she's like, hey, you ought to do this someday. You could knock this thing out. I'm just like, whoa, that's crazy. So kind of put the PCT piece out of my mind, but continued the hiking journey. In ninth grade, the school I went to had a hiking and backpacking class. So it just, was always in my world. Even when I transitioned into and joined the military, went all over the world and got to do some hiking at some just incredible places. And yeah, that's where it started.
Wow. Meat Grinder, I have to congratulate you again, because not only are you the first person in 5 seasons to mention the words soft, supple nipples, but you're also the first person to be inspired by his grandmother to become a thru hiker. That's impressive. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. She was a badass. She wasn't much of a hiker, but she, She, you know, put that that positive vibe, that positive thought in my head. And didn't think about the PCT for a number of years, but you know, fast forward and later it came up again and got to bang it out.
Okay. Now, Ginger Balls, who was, like I said, also in the military, he learned about the AT and thought about it for about 10 years while he was in the military. And then he retired and said he was going to do it. He showed up down at the at Springer Mountain with like a 60-pound pack. Because in the military, he had three of everything just in case the first two.
I'm with him. So, yeah.
So, I mean, your pack was substantially lighter at that point. I mean, you had gone through
Yeah.
your first hike was the Wonderland Trail.
Yeah.
You showed
That was a
up
shit
on the
show.
trail with, oh, really? Okay.
Oh my goodness. That was about that was in 2003, so that was a few years after graduating Ranger school. And you know, in my mind then, heavy was hardcore and heavy was badass. And you know, let me just gut this through. So I had an Osprey Crescent 110, 110 liter pack, and of course, 110 liters, I have to fill every bit of it. I had, and this is just ridiculous, I had a pair of boots, a pair of running shoes, because trail runners really hadn't come out yet, a pair of Tevas, like six pairs of socks, three of the 8 ounce fuel canisters. It was ridiculous, but I had a tarp, which is just okay. I don't know what that train of thought was there, but yeah, I'm gonna go light because I'm gonna bring a tarp. But it was, I finished. I enjoyed the hike, but I did not enjoy hiking the hike. It was rough. And after that, I was like, no, I'm not doing this anymore. And that's when Ray Jardine, you know, his hiking light stuff was kind of catching on, and you know, fabric technology and equipment was just starting to come on board. That Go Light company was you know, kind of leading the way in that. So yeah, I got rid of all that stuff and slowly, you know, rebuilt my backpacking kit. And it's been an evolution. Every single hike, I learned something. Every single hike, I'm tweaking something and trying something new. So I don't ever think, you know, there's a such thing as perfection, at least for me.
Nice. Now,
Yeah.
word to the wise, if you have a 110 liter pack and you feel the need to fill that 110 liter pack, that means that whole hike is going to be type two fun. I mean, you are not going to
The
enjoy
whole thing.
what's happening, but you will tell
Oh my
stories,
God.
my friend.
Yeah.
You will tell a
It
lot of
was
stories.
ridiculous. And people were just like, what in the hell is this guy doing? There were actually, I went to one of the camps because that's a managed backcountry. When you get your permit, you have to pick the camps that you have to stay in on that particular trail. And I went to, I think it was White River Campground, and there were some motorcycle campers, guys in there that had the off-road bikes with, the panniers and all that stuff, and they're in the camp next to me, and they're kind of looking over at me as I was, you know, getting my resupply and kind of, you know, looking at things, and they're like, "Dude, what are you doing?" And I was like, "I'm just cutting this out, man." And I only had a few days left, so you know, they took some of the excess food and a couple of fuel canisters, and you know, they helped me out a little bit, but yeah, it's definitely a learning experience and but an important part of the evolution, you know.
Yeah. Now, a lot of folks out there have like a, 40, maybe 42 liter or 55 liter is on the bigger side. Just to put this in perspective, the 110 liter, that's two times the size of a 55 liter pack. I mean, you had all kinds of room to put stuff in there.
It was just absolutely ridiculous. Yeah, I had a 35 liter pack for Northern California and Oregon. And you know, I was the whole time I'm out there thinking, I was like, man, this thing, you know, not quite, you know, about 2.5 times, I guess. Or yeah, close to 3 times. The size, that Osprey Crescent, that thing was ridiculous. I think the pack itself had to weigh like 12 pounds.
You probably could have put a couple of kids and a goat in there in
I
addition.
probably,
Yeah.
yeah.
All right. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of your PCT hike and your CT hike. So stay tuned for that. We'll be right back. From the backcountry to the backyard, we believe everyone deserves the highest level of protection. Since 1984, Sawyer Products offers the best, most technologically advanced solutions for protection against sun, bugs, and water. Using time-released liposome technology,
topical insect repellents, and new standards in water filtration. And with every Sawyer product you buy, you are helping to provide clean water through 140 charities in 80 countries with their long-lasting water filters. Every Sawyer product you buy is an investment in our common humanity. Choose Sawyer and keep the adventure going, knowing that their products have been tested and chosen by those who count on serious protection on the trail all day long. Six Moon Designs has been innovating ultralight backpacking gear for the past 20 years. With a wide range of products ranging from ultralight shelters to backpacks and accessories like their extensive line of trekking umbrellas, Six Moon Designs is sure to have a great piece of gear for your needs. With the company philosophy being that gear should aid one's experience, not define it, Six Moon Designs thinks the more time people spend outside the natural world, the better off this world will be. And remember, go wild, live young. This episode is sponsored by Jolly Gear. Are you tired of compromising between the ventilation of a button-down and the full protection of a sun hoodie? With the Triple Crown button-down, you can have the best of both. Plus, their fun standout patterns will have you the talk of the trail. Visit them at jollygear.com. Through hiker owned, Jolly Gear, where fun meets functional.
Welcome back. We are talking to Jay France, also known as Meat Grinder or Meat or Grinder or maybe Nips. I don't know.
Nips.
But before we leave the Wonderland Trail, just want to check in real quick. Any other than hiking it with a 110-pound pack and all kinds of redundant gear, any other stories you might want to share from that trail?
Yeah. So I ran into a person who was a little bit off and turned out to be, you know, doing bad things out there. And I came up, I was on the east side of the trail. I can't remember exactly what mile it was, but I'm going up the switchback and I hear this kind of rhythmic humming. And I walk up and I see this guy standing there. He's wearing like all cotton things. And he had like what it looked to be like an old military like laundry bag just slung over his back, and he's about a foot away from a tree, and he's just kind of rocking back and forth and you know, making these kind of weird noises. I'm like, okay, you know, this guy's in the zone here, and whatever. I said hello as I do with everybody I pass, and you know, he had no change in behavior. He just kept going. I kind of go over and you know, descend down into a lake where there were two guys fishing, and you know, said hello to them and start to get around this lake, and I hear someone yell help really loud. So I stop, didn't hear anything else. So I walk back to these guys, didn't see anybody. So I'm figuring, okay, you know, they just, I don't know if I didn't hear them properly or whatever. So I just keep hiking, not thinking about it. And about 2 days later, I go up to, I think it was Sunrise. I can't exactly remember where I picked up the resupply, but basically there were rangers up there. And as soon as I walk up to get my resupply, they're like, hey, have you seen this guy? You know, green pants, kind of a maroon shirt. I was like, yeah, he's carrying a laundry bag. He's like, yeah, man, when's the last time you saw him? I said, 2 days ago. Well, apparently what this guy was doing was living off other people's stuff, because up at Rainier, you have bear poles that you have to hang your stuff on. And this guy was going around and stealing people's food bags. And, you know, don't mess with a man's chow. I mean, seriously. And they set up on this guy. And then the next ranger I talked to, I was like, hey, did you guys, you know, roll up a dude that was, you know, stealing people's food bags? So apparently they caught the guy, but fortunately he didn't get mine. But yeah, I had never had like a weird experience like that with someone on the trail. But yeah, that was just kind of a one-off. But yeah, that was definitely a memorable moment for the Wonderland.
Yeah, that's kind of an anomaly out there, because the through hiking community is usually a pretty positive one, supportive one.
Yeah.
Nobody would dream of stealing stuff. Number one, it would add pack weight. Now, maybe you've got 110 liter pack.
110 liter, yeah.
That you wouldn't mind adding to. Yeah. But most of them, I'm not picking up anything additional. Are you kidding me?
No. Yes, that was it for the Wonderland.
Yeah, and I want to see how that story went, because if you were going to tell me that you ran into somebody out there who just didn't look like they knew what they were doing, I was going to say, that's kind of like the pot calling the kettle black.
Yeah, I was not educating anyone out on that trail other than, I was giving them plenty of humor and, there were a few people that wanted to take pictures with me and stuff. I was like, oh, these people are nice. Now, dumbass, they're taking a picture of you in that huge pack.
You won't believe the guy we ran into. Let me show you.
Look at this.
All right. So you learned. I mean, that was a learning
I
experience
did.
on the Wonderland Trail. And that's another, I'm going to steal that pro tip. Anytime you go out, you're going to learn something.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to refine how you approach your next hike. And so
Exactly.
your next hike was the PCT. What did you do in preparation for the PCT? You obviously understood this is a significantly longer hike than the Wonderland Trail. This is 2,650 miles, border to border. What did you do to get ready for that in terms of not only physical readiness, but also, preparation just to understand what you'd be running into out there?
Yeah, so I watched when I actually decided it was probably there's a documentary called Wizards of the PCT that the first that I know of people a group of hikers that basically documented their journey similar to what we do on YouTube now. That came out I believe 2011. I was watching that. My wife's like, hey, you ought to do that someday. She knew I had been talking about that. I told her the story about my grandmother and everything. And I was still about, 10 years out from retiring at that point. But I watched it to learn. And I did a lot of, I've done, a lot of hiking in the places that I've lived, both in country and overseas. Again, constantly growing, constantly refining. So I knew, what I was getting into, but I had never done anything that long. So my preparation was pretty much getting comfortable being uncomfortable. I live in the St. Louis area and it's flat out here, but I didn't use that as an excuse not to train. So would go out and put in those miles. Do some smaller hikes, going outside, it gets pretty cold here in the winter. Going outside and dialing in my gear, setting my stuff up outside, even though it was in my backyard, when it's cold and my hands are tingling or numb or, just those things that I knew I would probably experience out there. I tried to replicate those as much as I could before going. Then on top of that, just a lot of walking, a lot of walking with a pack on, just spending time with that additional weight as I had done, training for certain schools and courses in the military. I kind of knew what I needed to do. I knew my body very well based on some of the experiences I've had in my career and hiking. So, yeah.
So going to the market with the pack on, mowing the lawn with the pack on.
Walking around just odd places, what appeared to be odd. Or just, hey, if it's pouring rain outside, well, guess what? I'm just going to go out there and walk. If it's windy and it just sucks outside, I'm going to go out there. If it's hot, I'm going to go out there, just to put myself in some of those uncomfortable situations.
Now, you're not the first person, meat grinder, to emphasize the importance of being comfortable, being uncomfortable. And so for people listening in who may not have any ability to relate to that and are thinking to themselves, why would I want to do something that is so uncomfortable? Where's the joy in that? Why should I aspire to be comfortable being uncomfortable? What do you have to say in response to that?
Yeah, I would say, those uncomfortable situations, your feeling of reward after experiencing that and after overcoming that, even if it's, a short walk outside, you're going to come in, you're going to feel pretty good about it and say, hey, I did that. Or you're going to go on a long hike and you're going to have good times, you're going to have tough times, you're going to be miserable, you're going to be happy, you're going to, experience sadness, you're going to experience joy. And I cannot think of a time on any hike where I haven't had an amazing experience that follows one of those hard days. Some of my best experiences hiking have been after a real embracing of the suck experience. And like I said, I can't think of anything that hasn't. So yeah, I look at it that way.
Yeah, there is something to be said that at the end of a long day of hiking, you turn around and you look back at the horizon and you say, "No, I came from beyond that. I started the day way back there." And I granted, I have not done a long trail like the PCT, but I imagine that is even amplified even more, standing at the Canadian border and looking back and saying, "I started in Mexico."
But I will also offer too, not everybody, whether choice or situation, completes those. So another important thing that that I like to, discuss with people is, be proud of whatever accomplishment that you made. I find it happens quite often when somebody says, "Oh, I didn't finish the PCT, I didn't finish the AT, I didn't finish the CT, I didn't finish this or that." Well, what you did was you hiked 1,000 miles, or what you did was you hiked the Sierra, or you hiked one of the three states in the PCT, for example. Focusing on the things that you did rather than, perceiving it as you failing or not doing something. Hey, if you got everything out of that experience and it only took you 500 miles to do that, it's your time to peel off. Hey, be proud of your accomplishment,
Yeah, it kind of goes back to when I was talking about the professor, right? I mean, he's disappointed that he didn't set the record for most miles hiked in a year. But by God, that man hiked the calendar year triple crown, border to border, three times. I mean, how is that?
That's amazing.
And you're right. I mean, if you look at the percentage of people on the planet that have hiked, have done a 100-mile hike, have done a 500-mile hike, a 1,000-mile hike, I mean, you are in some rare air. If you've done, even if you didn't complete what you set out to complete, you're exactly right. I mean, they focus on the positive.
Heck yeah. Yeah.
All right. Hey, how long did it take you to do the PCT? How long were you out there?
So I was out for 144 days, but 128 days hiking. So I took some zeros. I enjoyed my time. Had to come off the trail to deal with, some life business. I had a friend who I met in fourth grade, who came out and hiked with me for a while, and had to wait a few days for his schedule to open up. His son was actually about 3 weeks ahead of me. And so he went and spent some time with him between Walker Pass and Kennedy Meadows South, and then he came back and hiked with me in Oregon. So waited a few days and didn't want to pass up that opportunity. So and I was in absolutely no rush. So I retired on the 1st of April, turned 50 the following week, and then started the trail the following week, and I had no backstop. So I had all the time in the world. I enjoyed my time on the trail, and I enjoyed my time in those awesome communities that support the trail also.
So that's less than what, 5 months? I see. What was your big mileage day?
I did a few 36s. I didn't I didn't partake in the Oregon Challenge or the 24-hour challenge or anything like that. I got up when I wanted to, hiked as far as I wanted to, and stopped when I wanted to,
Now, the professor, he hiked 27 miles yesterday and he didn't eat anything after lunch because he knew he was going to be having dinner with me. That man packed away some chow at dinner last night.
I'll bet he did.
Now, you were gone for just under 5 months. How supportive was your wife for this decision? I mean, to be away from somebody for 5 months, that's something
Yeah.
to agree to. That's huge.
She was awesome. So, and so were my sons. She knew that this was a childhood dream of mine, and she actually, she got me pretty good. So I know that's because, I've deployed 10 times. She's deployed twice. A lot of, she was, like I said, in the military as well. So we've spent a lot of time apart. Not just on deployments, but training and those other things that we need to do. So we were accustomed to it. And our sons were accustomed to, one of us being gone. And our philosophy on things is, we're focusing on the time we have together rather than, dwelling or being ass hurt about, the time that me or mom are away. But I was, because, she is, her and I have been together 22 years, been married 20 of that, and she's been by my side through thick and thin the whole time, as have my sons. And I felt a little bit guilty about, wanting to do this thing. So what I was going to do was a compromise, and I was going to hike the 500 miles of Washington to finish where I started in my home state. And she just kind of, what are you talking about, dude? She's like, man up. I mean, do the whole thing. I was like, all right. Yeah, that's what I wanted to hear. But so she was great there. And then the support, I did a, I look at my resupply strategy. I do a lot of resupply boxes. For me, that works the best because it saves time. It saves me frustration. I get that time back. If I go into a town, if I just have to go to a post office, yes, I am at the mercy of post office hours or business hours, but I don't have to spend six times, and I don't have to get pissed off when a group of, a tramley's ahead of me and they're like locusts and they just like decimate everything. And I have, a peanut butter packet and a jar of pickles, to last me, 100 miles. I don't do that. So, she sent my resupply boxes from home. And then I kind of, as I got to Northern California, I purchased and sent forward my resupplies for Oregon. And then when I got to Cascade Locks, Portland area, I sent my stuff up from Washington. But she was my reach back when I had, sleeping mat issues or things that I wanted to swap out. She was all over it, as were my kiddos.
Now you come from a military background. I can hear the organization. I can hear your plan. You've got it all mapped out. Obviously, you mentioned before you checked in with a lot of influencers out there, watched their videos and followed their feeds and kind of got a handle on what you thought that the PCT was going to be like. Did the PCT match up to your expectations? You pack up, you go down to Campo. Is it as you expected? Did it all go to plan?
It did, but then I tried to back away from that a little bit because one of the experiences I wanted to get out of that was to slow down, to be present for myself after serving others for so many years and the focus as a leader of being everything for everybody facing out. I kind of lost sight of, I could talk a good game on self-care. I could talk a good game on mental health and taking care of yourself and reflecting and, giving yourself time, but I really sucked at it. So, when I got out there, I realized soon that I was like, you know what, I've done it again. And here I have, I've overplanned. So I laid off of that, even though I stuck with my resupply piece, because I look at that as, again, time back, that I got. So I did stick with that. But then I really tried to stop, scheduling, stop worrying about miles, stop worrying about, I got to get to this town, by this day. And I just did as much freestyle as I could, but I did apply some pressure to myself because my family came and met me at Tahoe over the Independence Day weekend. And for us to be able to do that, we had to make the Airbnb reservations before I left. So the whole time in my mind, I was like, hey, I got to make these miles. I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to get up there because the plan was for them to, come down from Reno, pick me up wherever I was on the trail and then bring me back. Well, added an additional little bit on there because I wanted to surprise them. So I did as many miles as I could. I got up to Donner Pass, came off, actually met them at the airport where, to kind of surprise them. And for me to be able to do that, I had to stick to a pretty aggressive schedule, two pass days through the Sierra. Just doing some things that, when I reflect back, I'm glad we had the opportunity to get together. It was hard leaving them a second time. That really sucked. And, I had a pretty tough go in Northern California. I have no regrets about the PCT, but if I were to do it again, I would just freestyle as much as I could. Just let off and take my time and maybe do a little bit more shopping for resupply, maybe not, but definitely slow down.
Yeah, wow, that kind of blows my mind that you start in Mexico, start in Campo, and you've already made the reservations for the 4th. You've got to be in Tahoe on July 4th. So no pressure there. I mean,
No.
you've got a schedule to meet, buddy.
But I mean, it was worth it to see them and, spend 5 days off the trail and enjoy my time with them, recover because, I was pretty wore out when I got up there.
Yeah, but you talk about, being comfortable, being uncomfortable, and taking that 5 day break with your family. I mean, you had to get comfortable right there, being with them, the familiar folks, and just the comfort of being around them, and then going back out again. I mean, I imagine that like you said, Northern California was rough after that.
You come out of the Sierra, which is just beautiful, and Northern California was the place that I enjoyed the least. And as soon as, I mean, like I said, it was tough. They came up, they brought me back to Donner and went down the trail with me a little bit, and we said our goodbyes, and then it was the next day, the fires started. Northern California is where a lot of the strong mentally and physically hikers, a lot of people make the decision to leave the trail at that point, and it got in my head. And then the loneliness of missing my family, which I said was the hardest part, the heat, there was record heat, the fires, all of those things, just I was not in the greatest of mental state when I was in Northern California. So that was, there were days where I was just putting miles behind me to get out of the state, and California is just so long. So all of these things, kind of built up and gave me a run for my money. Again, on that mental aspect, Northern California was tough for me.
Yeah, what did you learn about yourself, meat grinder, from this experience?
Yeah, so there, I have a lot of deployment experiences, and some of those, pretty tough ones, that I had to get some pretty deep, extensive mental health care and help from. And those things you don't get to choose when those thoughts, when that darkness, comes back, you don't get to pick that. So with all those challenges that I just described to you, that just slipped in there. And like I said, had a hard time, but the goodness in that was this was the first time, I believe ever, that I had the time to let those thoughts play out without interruption. For me to get a deeper understanding of, those tough situations that I had no control over those things. Sometimes in a deployed environment, things happen. We go to war for a reason, and some bad things are expected to happen. And for those of us that witness those, we all deal with those things differently. And sometimes time can change that. Having children can change your view on a lot of things. Those were the things that kind of hit me, but I had no escape. I had nothing to go to. I had to sit in those thoughts and let them completely play out. So as difficult as it was, it was a great experience because I thought I had gained closure through some time in therapy, but I truly didn't. But on the trail, I had the time to, and I gained a deeper understanding and appreciation for things, and came out on the end so much better in my mind and my heart. It was a tough experience, but it was good.
Yeah, you definitely have a lot of time to think out there. And I think
Yeah.
through that process of being alone with your own thoughts, I hear time and time again how the trail is transformative. I mean, it really has.
Is. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And I do want to go back to being uncomfortable. Think there is something to be said for how that translates to real life. I mean, in real life, we're confronted every day with difficult decisions, difficult situations, uncomfortable situations. Those people who do great things in life usually have to do so through, you know, persistence and grit and sticking with it. And I think there's something to be said about that skill being developed and learned and refined on the trail and applying that in real life. I mean, you have to feel like after doing 2,650 miles border to border, that if you can do that, if you can suffer what you suffered through in Northern California, the fires and the heat and everything else, I mean,
yeah,
you can do just about anything.
Oh, absolutely. And I would say add on top of that, you know, the simplicity that we experience, you know, on the trail. There was a time, and I talk about it in one of my YouTube videos, where I think it was 38 items that I had. I had all that I needed. I had nothing more. It didn't matter what I wanted. It didn't matter what I wish I had. I had what I had and had to deal with it. It wasn't complicated. It was simple. And I think to your point, when we talk about that, that grit, having the ability to look at things for what they are and take a simplistic approach and not add unnecessary complexity and not add additional layers and all of those things. So you combine what you gain through your mental and physical toughness on the trail with a simplistic approach to things when you get off the trail, that can make a big difference, a profound difference in someone's life. Really can.
Yeah, life in civilization seems very complicated sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think you can cut through all that and really narrow it down to, you know, what's important, what's required, what's needed, and all of that line, just like a so.
Yeah.
Fantastic. All right. Hey, anything else on the PCT? What was your favorite spot on the PCT? Your favorite moment?
Oh, Boiler my Rock? Favorite. Yeah, Goat Rocks. You know, when I bring it back to, you know, one of those pictures that's in that National Geographic magazine that my grandmother showed me. So Goat Rocks up in Washington was just an incredible experience for me. The weather was bad. Clouds were going across. Every once in a while, I could see Mount Rainier, you know, picking or, you know, kind of poking through. The sun would come out, then the clouds would move in. It was windy. I was getting blown all over the place. But that's one of those type two fun things that afterwards, I was just absolutely lit up. It was so cool. One, to, you know, go to that place from, you know, 45 years ago that, you know, kind of sparked my interest in the trail itself, to actually go there later and have, you know, that right as I'm in the state that I'm going to finish. It was awesome. Yeah, I wouldn't trade that for a clear day. The experience I had, I got my ass kicked up there, and it was awesome.
Yeah, those difficult times, the bad weather times, those are memorable. I mean, those are the ones you talk about.
Yeah, it was awesome.
All right, hey, let's move to Colorado.
Yeah,
Colorado Trail. What? So you did the PCT in 2021,
mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming you did the Colorado Trail in this year, 2022.
This year, yeah. Yep.
Which direction did you go?
I went southbound and I took Collegiate West. Mm-hmm. It was great.
Okay. And what kind of logistics did you run into in terms of permitting and traveling there? How long did it take you? Those kinds of things.
Yeah, it was easy to get there. You know, you fly into Denver. Like I said, I live, you know, right outside of St. Louis on the Illinois side here. I went out there 3 days early, to acclimate, and do some day hikes up there. So I had plenty of time to prepare, here. Equipment was dialed in, I did underestimate that trail, though, I gotta be honest with you. Flew in, to Denver, spent a couple days in Colorado Springs doing some day hiking, went up to Leadville, which is, I think around 10-5. Did some hiking up there, spent 36 hours just to make sure I was good to go with the elevation change. Then went back to Denver, caught an Uber to the trailhead from my hotel, and off I went southbound. And I had sent a couple boxes or a few boxes out there.
Of course.
Yeah, of course I did. Because I went late, you know, I started in August, so I was kind of outside of the season. I went late because I wanted to avoid the majority of the monsoonal activity, and That didn't work out. I got my ass kicked out there. I was on the trail for 27 days, 27 days of hiking, and 15 of those days rained. And I was getting beat up with the rain at the beginning there. Dipped in and did a couple of my own resupplies, but only saw about 20 people out there because it was late in the season. And chose to do Collegiate West because I made a weather call when I got into Twin Lakes, I believe is the town, something Lakes. Didn't look like it was going to snow, so I took the Collegiate West, which has a little bit more elevation and views, and really glad I did that. But hardest day was up there on Collegiate West, and again, after that really, really tough day, I was rewarded with the next morning with the most incredible sunrise. So it made all that that suck kind of disappear.
Yeah, I think my hypothesis is that the best views, the best experiences come after the hardest days. And I think they are inextricably linked together. I mean, you put in the hard work and there is this reward at the end.
That, like I said, I did underestimate the Colorado Trail. That is a hard trail. And that tough day, I came at a Cottonwood Pass, and there's about five, not passes that you go over, but some pretty significant climbs that day. And move quickly, here comes a lightning storm. Wait out the lightning storm, move quickly, here comes another one. And then the rain started, and I got on top of that last ridge, and the lightning started all around me, and I'm just like, screw it. I stuck my trekking pole in the air. I was like, just send it, let's just get this over with. But of course, I'm here, didn't get struck by lightning. But I continued down, and then I just couldn't find a camp for about 5 more miles, and I was ready to stop. And then got dark, said I just set up in the grass, and it just poured all night, and it let up, right before the sun came out. And I got up, and through the clouds, I mean, there was just this beautiful pink purple colors, bouncing off the clouds, and the mountains were arranged so I could see five or six ridges. I mean, it was perfect. It was awesome. So I recovered from that tough day before, and it was awesome.
Beautiful. Now, Mikra, I have to tell you that if I had hiked the Pacific Crest Trail and done it in less than 5 months, I probably would underestimate everything for the rest of my life. That, I did that and everything else is going to be easy from this point on. And what could compare to that? So I don't fault you at all for underestimating your CT.
It was worth every mile, but it was tough. That elevation and those climbs out there, I think it's 90,000 feet about of gain and loss throughout that 486 miles. That it's a run, and there were some folks I ran into on the trail, like, oh, because I ran into two other hikers that I had hiked the PCT with out there. One was doing it, and then one lived in Leadville. And just talking to folks as day hikers, or every pass, or the very few that I saw, they're like, oh, you did the PCT, and they're like, oh man, this is easy. I was like, no, this is not easy. This is a very difficult trail. And the people that finish that thing have a lot to be proud of.
Wow, 90,000 feet. That's impressive.
I think it's 89 or 90,000 feet.
That distance? Wow. Yeah. Hey, what's next for Jay? What's your next adventure going to be?
Well, my current adventure is I'm writing a book about my experiences on the PCT and a little bit of the CTD, and just reflection on the experiences out there, reflection on life, as an airman, as a husband, as a father, as those life experiences that built you. So about halfway done with that, looking forward to finishing that. But that's my current journey. I've been really focused on that. Hiking. Oh, go ahead.
You have a working title for the book?
My journey of reflection. And that we'll adjust that because that's a lot of words. But in my typical fashion, as I write something, I think the final title will just come to me. But that's the working title.
All right. And expected publishing date? When can I read what I'm
Hopefully
asking?
early next year.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to get it done, December, January, and then it'll be kind of up to the editor and the publishing piece as well. But yeah, hopefully early, at least early to mid next year.
Okay. So, I mean, you must have made a lot of progress on the book already then.
Yeah, it's a matter of just filling in. It's a huge running outline with content, and now I'm just going back and filling in those running thoughts, and it's been fun. Yeah,
Nice.
I chose to do it all myself instead of getting a ghostwriter or anything, and I'm appreciating this journey. It keeps me on the trail. It does.
Nice. And what's your next
Yeah.
hike?
So most likely, so this year is college prep for my older son. He starts over in Mizzou, which is about 2.5 hours away from here. He starts next year, so we're gonna do a family trip to Europe this summer. But I'm probably gonna squeeze in the Tahoe Rim Trail at some point in there. I'm also going to take my younger son on a trip. Probably out to Olympic National Park, or maybe somewhere in the Sierra. My older son, he and I went and did the Northern Loop Trail up at Rainier when he was 12. That was his first big hike, and awesome father-son bonding experience. And now we're past COVID, we're past the other things, and retirement, and all the other things for my wife and I. And now it's time to bring my 13-year-old out for his hike experience. I'm going to let him drive that, figure that out, but probably after school starts for my older son, I'll bounce out to Tahoe and spend some time out there and slow down through at least the PCT portion of the Tahoe Rim Trail. After that, I have no desire to go after my Triple Crown. I've done some. I was stationed out in New Jersey, so I've done a couple hundred miles of the AT. I enjoyed it. Ran into actually the AT runs through the mountain ranger training phase in Dahlonega, Georgia. So even though I didn't get to hike it, there were a couple hikers that they didn't know we were there, but it wasn't hiking season because this was in December, but I did see some AT hikers out there coming up. I could smell them about probably a quarter mile away. Smelled like laundry soap, big packs with probably a lot of food. All of us were hungry, but we didn't roll them and take their stuff. But we thought about it. Maybe the Arizona Trail at some point. I love the desert, and my wife and I are probably going to do one of the Caminos, probably the northern route. Together, she enjoys hiking, but not to the thru hike level. So I talked to her. I was like, "Hey, babe, check this out." She's Puerto Rican, so she speaks Spanish. We got culture, we got hostels, we got wine, we got food, we got light packs.
You got a pub at
I'm
every
in.
stop. That's right. Nice.
Yeah. So we hope to do that in the coming years as well.
Fantastic. You sound like you got it all mapped out. That's gonna be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Meat grinder, you know where we are?
I think we're at the what is it, the pro tip?
The pro tip insight of the week.
That's right, Hef.
Yeah.
Meat grinder has listened to the podcast. He knows all my little clues. It is time for the pro tip insight of the week, where you get to share some trail wisdom with our listeners. So, what do you have for us?
I think avoiding comparisons. As we talked, throughout the podcast, hiking is an evolution. You've said it, I've said it, during our time together here. We learn, we grow, we evolve, we constantly change. And I noticed a lot of that on both trails, actually. Hey man, your pack is small. How many miles are you doing? What shoes are those? What tent, how much does that thing weigh? What's your base weight? What's next for you? What have you done? Okay. It kind of comes down to the hike your own hike concept. When we spend so much time comparing ourselves to others, we kind of lose our true selves, you know? And it's hard for us to be the best version of ourselves when we're trying to be someone else or someone we're not, whether that's on the trail, whether that's in life. So I noticed a lot, especially at the beginning part of the PCT, just lots of comparisons. And I'll tell you what, the people I respected the most on those trails were the ones that came out. They went to REI 2 days before, bought the heaviest shit that that sales rep that has absolutely no working knowledge sometimes of, you know, being in that situation recommended to them. But they go out there and they suck it up and they grow and they change and they improve and they evolve. And then to see those people at the end is just awesome. And that, you know, that comes back to that, that comparison thing. There's a difference between helping somebody learn and grow or that person that hops on YouTube and sees what Darwin or Dixie is carrying or wearing. And they go out and buy the exact same stuff and they have a really crappy experience. Well, that stuff is not for everyone. I think sometimes people fail to understand that, that evolution piece as we grow as hikers. But yeah, so that's it with the comparison thing.
I think that was a beautiful and articulate way of saying hike your own hike. I love the
yeah.
way all that. So that's fantastic. All right.
Thank you.
There you have it. That's it. This episode is just about in the books. Hope our listeners enjoyed our time with Meat Grinder. I want to thank him for joining us this week. Nips, how can our listeners keep up with you on social media? Where can they find updates on your latest adventures?
Yeah, so I have a YouTube channel, JF Adventures. Where I documented my entire PCT through hike and about half of my my Colorado trail hike. I chose to come off the net and just immerse myself in the experience. Also JF Adventures on Instagram, where from time to time I do share my experiences, long or short, when I'm outside.
Okay. Remember to check out the pod on social media as well. We are on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And if you have comments or clips you want to share, you can send it to me at johnfreakymuir@gmail.com.
The Adventure Media Recommendation.
Jay, I'm also looking to you to share a recommendation for a book, movie, documentary, something out there that's going to help our listeners stay connected to the trail in the off season. We are calling this our Adventure Media Recommendation. What do you have for us?
Yeah, so for movie media, I would say check out if those interested in the PCT, you know, check out that Wizards of the PCT documentary. It's on their website. You can easily Google it. And then whatever trail you're going on, like I talked about that National Geographic article that I looked at from 1971. I know I also have a book from 1975, I think, about the PCT. I know those things exist for the AT and some of those things. I would encourage folks to not just look at now, but if they have the opportunity, you know, find some publication or book from way back when that thing first started and see how it started. Learn about the people who built it. Learn about the challenges and the wins as those trails have been constructed, because it's pretty amazing to what we've done in this country with the National Scenic Trails.
Yeah, I have a profound respect for people who did those trails back before the age of all of us walking around with a computer in our pocket.
Yeah. Yeah.
Smartphones, being able to access any information we want, anytime we want. I mean, for someone who, I mean, 2003, even you doing the Wonderland Trail in 2003, you know, people doing it back in the 70s, it's just mind-boggling.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad that there was no TikTok or anything in 2003, because I know I would have been the victim of a whole bunch of dumb shit because of that huge back I had. I would have been all over. So I'm pretty thankful that we didn't have it back then.
I am thankful. I constantly, I'm glad, constantly glad that social media did not exist when I was a teenager. How many skeletons in my past would be public knowledge?
Yeah, I'm with you.
It's tough right now for kids.
It is.
They're making mistakes and everybody gets to see the mistakes. And
yeah,
to go back to your point about comparison, I mean, social media, oof, all you're doing on social media is you're comparing your life to others, what they're portraying on social media. And that's just
yeah,
for, you know, I'm not living the best life compared to what I'm seeing. And so I'm unhappy.
Yeah.
So it's tough, tough out there.
It is. Yeah.
What have we not asked you?
All right, Jay, before we wrap things up, just one more segment for you called What Have I Not Asked You That You're Dying to Tell Us About? What do we miss tonight?
Yeah, I think I went off on so many tangents in here that we went a whole bunch of different directions, and great questions to cover it. But yeah, I really stand by that comparison thing. You brought up a great point. And to that, the last thing I'll add is these hikes, it's not Instagram. It's not that that perfect, pretty side shot with all of the, you know, brand tags off on one side, you know, stick your butt out, make your lips puff up. That stuff is hard. And, you know, once people get past the Instagram view of these things, I think they'll realize that. And then that's when the real fun starts. Yeah.
So if I go to your Instagram page and see you sticking your butt out and puffing your lips up, I know
no.
that's not real. That's not the reality.
No, feel free to blast me if you do. Yeah.
All right. Hey, that is a wrap from the John Freaking Muir studio. Any shout outs to friends and family, Jay?
Oh, yeah, to my wife and kiddos. Love them. Thanks for the support. And also a shout out to all of those small businesses and those communities along all of these trails that really sometimes bend over backwards to take care of us and are sometimes underappreciated.
Well said. All right. Thank you for tuning in. Always remember, the trail is the trail. It doesn't care if you want to go downhill. It doesn't care if it's almost dark and you're looking for a campsite. It doesn't even care if your nipples are bleeding through your shirt and everybody wants to see them. The trail is the trail. Embrace the suck.